All right, welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, April 13th. Very, very excited for today's show as Jamie's sleepers, breakouts, and busts 1.0 are out on fantasynews.cbsports.com. And we get to talk about some of those sleepers today. I'm Adam Azer. Hey, Dave Richard, singular.
What's up, Adam Azer?
Hey, Jamie Eisenberg, what's up?
I refuse to speak during the show.
What are you talking
about? The whole
show.
I'm just going to let you guys pick apart my sleeper, so I'm not going to talk.
Well, you know, we can pick them apart in a positive way and find just how awesome and airtight they are.
Give me an example of the last time something was picked apart in a positive way.
I'm going to just rap. I said,
You got to go harder than that on the turntables.
So before we get into everything, we have two things to talk about. One is the 2016 Podcast League. Yes, already, April 13th. I figured the people who are listening right now deserve a chance before all the other posers out there get access to the Podcast League. The people listening now deserve a chance. The other thing is the doppelganger of the day. I want you guys...
It's a doppelganger of the decade.
Century. I would rather you guys tell the story, because what I want to know, when I saw this, when Jamie sent me the link... of Dave's lookalike, I laughed really hard out loud by myself.
So did we.
Did Jamie have that epic Jamie laugh where like his face?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. His face was red. The vein was popping out. Water in his eyes.
I was banging on the table.
Yeah. it was quite epic for Jamie. So here's how this went down. I was trying to find my profile on LinkedIn. So I searched for my name. And I found it, but I also found a guy named Dave Richards in Dallas, Texas, who looks a lot like me. And it was really creepy, but it was too good not to share. And I knew everybody would get a kick out of it. I didn't know we were going to talk about it on the podcast.
Oh, we
but
are.
Here we are.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's a guy named Dave Richards.
But there's a lot of
looks like he's a big dude, glasses, goatee. Devastatingly handsome.
You guys look so similar. It is crazy.
It is unbelievable. And you know, he's an industrial investor. I'm a fantasy football investor. I don't know anything else about
him. I know you sent him.
I'm half Texan.
You tried to connect with him. Did he respond?
I connected. You know, when you connect with people on LinkedIn, it sends like a generic message. Like, I would like to connect with you on LinkedIn. So I took that message and added at the end. And by the way, you are very handsome. And I had said, I have not heard back from Dave Richards. I don't know if, he might think I'm,
you know,
sort
what,
of
you know, what would be so awesome if you ever talked to him and he's like, oh my God, you're the guy. People come up to me all the time and say, give me fantasy advice.
It's, well, for those of you who don't know, and I think a lot of people don't, like, Dave is Dave Richard. This guy is Dave Richards. So.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, Dave can obviously attest to this much more, but having known Dave for 10 years, we still do shows here at CBSSports.com where there's new hosts or new people on the show with
or
us.
Or old hosts who've been around a while.
You're right. You know, Harry Arms and, you know,
Love
Cats.
Please.
Where they, you know, were mistakenly, you know, so here I'm with Jamie Eisenberg and Dave Richards, or, you know, that
right.
Just happens, you know, kind of radio shows. You know, I've heard people
happens
say that about
all the
him.
Time.
Right. So that's what makes it to me funnier is that everybody always
it's like
makes
the misspelling of Jamie. When people write in, they know your name's Jamie, but
yeah,
they go with the
right.
IE.
Right. That obviously
of the
is
EY.
Right. That obviously is something like the feedback we used to have. We used to have on our bio pages.
Yeah.
Send Dave and Jamie feedback on our individual pages. You'd have to click in that box where it says Jamey, and then I would say, Dear Jamie, Jamie.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
How? People are just used to it. People are used to spelling Jamie away, and they think Richards is, and I guess Richards is a far more common last name than Richard.
Yeah, let's be honest here. Let's be fair to people.
It's pretty crazy that there's a Dave Richards who pretty much looks dead on. Now, we did look at some other LinkedIn profiles of other Dave Richards, and there were a lot of other big guys with goatees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you all need to Google Dave Richards, Dallas, Texas, LinkedIn, and it will take you directly to the... It's just
but
amazing.
Please don't connect with him and
that'll connect.
Harass
don't connect.
Him.
Yeah.
Be nice to Dave.
All right, so how do you get in the podcast league? Here's how. NFL
Your name
draft.
Is Dave Richards.
Yeah. Grow a goatee and put on some glasses. The NFL draft is coming up. Email us at fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. your prediction for the top 10 picks of the NFL draft. All right. So all you have to do is the top 10 players. You don't have to tell me which team they go to, just 1 through 10. And whoever gets the most right, assuming there's no ties, will be in the podcast. Like, we're only giving out one spot here. The tiebreaker, how many trades involving 2016 first round picks will take place? How many trades involving 2016 first round picks will take place? So that's the tiebreaker, but correctly predict the top 10 picks of the NFL draft. Whoever gets the most
in order, Adam?
Yeah, in order.
Okay.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So you have to get like Laremy Tunsil one, and he has to go number one. It's not just pick 10 players that go in the top 10.
Right.
You have to
get a point if you pick Tunsil to go number one.
Yes.
And let's say Goff goes number two.
Right.
You pick that, you've got 2 points.
Yeah, what's is the deadline day of draft?
Yeah.
Let's make it the day after.
No, I don't know if we're doing it the week before.
All right.
No, you know, day of the draft is fine.
Day before? I'm just want to make sure you know what we're
doing. All right. You have to put it out there.
So this is your chance as loyal listeners to get in the podcast league before everybody else. Now, today we'll talk about LeGarrette Blount. We'll talk about Josh Gordon. A couple of draft notes.
Those are short topics.
Those are what?
Short topics.
Yeah, well. Everything we can make anything as long or as short as we want. I've figured out, you know.
Yeah,
we just did a 45-minute mic check. Of course we can.
But first, I want to explore a topic that is brought up a lot. And I was reading Jamie's sleeper story, and he mentioned Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback sleeper, and we can probably spend more time on him a little bit later. I won't go through everybody in Jamie's column, by the way. You can read them on fantasynews.cbsports.com. But one of the points you make for Tannehill is that the Dolphins' defense should be bad, and that should help Ryan Tannehill. So I did some research to either support or dispel the notion that quarterbacks on teams with bad defenses are better in fantasy or benefit in fantasy. Do you guys really believe? Because I feel like we say that on this show a lot. I don't know that I buy it as much as you do. Just tell me your thoughts on that. Do you really think that's important?
Well, think about game flow and think about how playing from behind,
overrated,
especially in the fourth quarter,
overrated,
can lead to some extra yardage and extra touchdowns. There's no question.
I think it's just extra attempts. You know,
yeah, sure.
And for Tannehill, you know, I know you're not trying to be specific, but there's going to be probably an inconsistent run game there too. You know, so yeah. I just look at it, him in general. His pass attempts should be up. Like, his career best was 2 years ago at 590. I have a feeling he's going to get into the 600s this year. Like, he dipped down last year. I think he was like around 570 something. I think he gets into the 600s this year. So you know, you have to hope that the extra attempts, if he stays around the same numbers, completion percentage, all those things, that's a few more yards, maybe another touchdown or two, also potentially more interceptions. So I think that's kind of where that goes in. But I mean,
well, he had 587. You know, he had the eighth most
587.
Pass
okay. So I think he, but like I said, I think he creeps up a little bit. And it's not like Dolphins defense has been good the last couple of years either. So it's not like it's going to be a dramatic difference for him. I just think that there's going to be a little bit more of a shootout situation from the Dolphins standpoint for them to be competitive.
Not making this about Tannehill, just this is what I found in the last three seasons. In 2013, what I did was I looked at the top 10 quarterbacks, fantasy points, 6 points per passing touchdown in each of the last 3 years. And in 2013, only one of the top 10 fantasy quarterbacks was on a team with a bottom 10 defense. And that's not total defense. That's points per game allowed. In 2014, three quarterbacks.
And who was it, Breeze?
Yeah, probably Breeze every year. Right. Although, no, that was the year that the Saints had a good defense. So it was...
In 2013?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was...
Peyton Manning.
No, he was 11th. Romo. Tony Romo. So one in the top... One in the bottom 10. In 2014, there were three quarterbacks who had bottom 10 defenses.
Okay, but how many of those were bottom 15 defenses, though?
Well, that's half the league.
Yeah.
But I think you got to look at it that way, though. It's not necessarily the worst defenses. It's just bad defenses in general.
I think it's got to be, like, the worst defenses. I think that's what you're looking for. The problem is that a lot of the worst defenses are on teams with the worst offenses. Cleveland! So I you're going to find a lot of situations that just aren't going to be good for fantasy no matter what.
Yeah, I think it's worth more exploration because last year was a good example of it. You had Blake Bortles, who was on the second worst defense. You had Drew Brees, who was on the worst, and you had Eli Manning, who was on the third worst. Those three were all top eight quarterbacks. And then you had Stafford, who was ninth.
Year before Luck, right?
Yeah, Luck, in 2014, the Colts only allowed the 14th most points. The year before, in 2014, you had Drew Brees, you had Matt Ryan, and Eli Manning, three quarterbacks in the top 10 in fantasy with bottom 10 defenses, but only one in the top 8 in fantasy. Mm-hmm. So worth more exploration, I think, but just kind of an interesting theory. Like Bortles, like if Blake Bortles had a better defense this year, would you downgrade him? Would you say that a lot of
their defense should definitely be better this year?
Is that a downgrade for Bortles?
I think it stings him a little bit, and I think the addition of Chris Ivory does too.
Absolutely,
because it reinforces their run game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. I think you could take the count.
How many games did Jacksonville have last year where they had a lead and they were grinding down the clock in the fourth quarter,
or were able to score in the red zone running the ball?
Yeah. And now that's going to change because of those two developments.
But another thing I've noticed is that teams with good run games, they just have better offenses, and that could, this probably also is worthy of more research. You know, I'm not drawing any conclusions, but if let me start by saying this. If you had a bad run offense, I don't know that that would help the quarterback, because that just takes you off the field. Less first downs, less possession.
Right. And a lot of, you know, down and distance, you know, plays a part, and that's where turnovers come in, which, you know, was a negative for Bortles too. I mean, imagine if he didn't have all those interceptions, how good he would have been.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, anyway.
But I mean, yeah, like to your point, I mean, you know, Cam was great last year. The Panthers were good at running the ball. They were good at time of possession. He was on the field a lot. He scored a lot of rushing touchdowns. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe we take rushing quarterbacks sort of out of this mix. They're kind of their own breed.
Okay. Rodgers 2 years ago. You know, I know Jordy Nelson was a big part of it, but think about how good they were running the ball with Lacy.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's the top. All right, the top 10 quarterbacks off the top of our head, did they have good run offenses in 2015? Cam Newton, yes.
Patriots, no.
Tom Brady, no. Russell Wilson?
Yes.
Blake Bortles?
It was a little hot and cold with Russell Wilson, though. Like, Rawls was doing well, once Rawls went down, he had nothing.
Sure. But again, you know, you're taking Russian quarterbacks. I don't know if he counts.
Right.
That's a good point. How about Bortles?
Palmer did.
Brees did.
Ingram was very good.
Mm-hmm.
Who's after that?
Did. Aaron Rodgers. Then Eli. Eli didn't till the very end of the year. Stafford, no way. Kirk Cousins, I'd say no. So more no's than yeses there.
More no's than yeses, yeah.
That's what I said.
To the news and notes, I was backing it up. Dave Richard. The Patriots re-signed LeGarrette Blount. What does this mean to you guys?
I think it's just a guy they're familiar with. You know, I mean, he's coming off hip surgery. He still has to prove himself, I think, again. But, you know, Bill Belichick knows what he likes, and he likes, you know, a guy that doesn't fumble. He runs hard between the tackles. Is he going to be a great fantasy guy? No. I think he's a guy you look at as the third or fourth running back that you take middle to the end of your draft.
Okay. So is he after both Jaguars guys?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Would you rather take, like, Tevin Coleman or a LeGarrette Blount?
I think I have Blount a little bit higher than Coleman.
I'd take a chance on Coleman now, because I don't know if Blount's a guarantee to make the team.
Okay, fair enough. The NFL denied Josh Gordon's petition for reinstatement. Gordon reportedly had a diluted sample for his latest drug test, and that equates to a failed test. Now he can reapply for reinstatement again on August 1st.
Right.
Wow. You think
right after camp opens and everything else, I don't think he plays.
Yeah, do you think Jared Goff...
I'd be surprised.
Goff and Carson Wentz are just like, please, no, do not draft me. Oh, my God. Who would want to go to Cleveland?
Well, the money is green no matter where you play. And if you think you're good at quarterback, then you'll think you can win anywhere. And you can find decent players after round one in the draft. Maybe the Browns go after a couple of receivers. And maybe there's something there to at least build on past the season. But obviously, you look at what they've got. It's such a bare bones roster.
It's awful.
Yeah, even on defense, there's just not a lot there that's exciting.
No,
it's depressing. And now there's talk that Joe Thomas is going to get traded. I would say he's their best offensive player at left tackle.
We have two of our NFL guys that are very, very adamant, based on their knowledge of the front office and coaching staff in Cleveland, that it's going to be Jared Goff if they stay at two.
Yep. Brady Quinn told me that he thinks the Browns are going to trade out of two and take whatever deal they can get just to get out of two if a quarterback falls to them when they pick in round one after making the trade, fine, but they just want to stockpile picks. And if they're not in love with Goff or Wentz, they should do something like that.
Sure.
But apparently they are in love with Goff. The coaching staff is in love with Goff. The front office is split.
Particularly Pep Hamilton, their offensive coordinator.
And Hugh Jackson. I mean, you know, if you connect the dots, which, and the guys I'm referring to are Pete Prisco and Jason LaCanfora, and Pete's got a good relationship with Hugh Jackson. Not that Hugh's told him this specifically because, you know, that's not the case.
Right.
But that Hugh Jackson and Pep Hamilton are both Pac-12 guys that have, you know, intimate knowledge of Goff, you know, just in terms of the way that he plays and what style he would fit with them.
Yeah, well, LaCanfora wrote a whole story about it. I encourage you all to read it, cbssports.com/NFL. A couple more notes before we get to the sleepers.
Well, in that same story, not to, you know, take you off path, but he also said that if Ezekiel Elliott is available to the Eagles at 8, that they will take him if one of the quarterbacks is not available.
Man, that's a smokescreen. I think that's a smokescreen.
I don't think so at all.
To try and get somebody to move up to take Elliott in front of him.
I don't think so at all. I think they want a quarterback.
Who? Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Right.
And so I don't know if Elliott to me
they're trying to get Paxton Lynch to fall to them.
Oh, or if not, there's no chance. Paxton Lynch will definitely be their date if things go right now. I think what they're if you read the tea leaves, what Doug Peterson said a few weeks ago, and you know Jason doing his reporting, I think it makes a ton of sense that they would go after Elliott at 8.
Well, you know, guys, the hype train on Elliott is moving along pretty well.
And I'm out of control.
I'm pretty excited about it. Maybe I'm buying in too much, but boy.
I think he's going to be a great fantasy running back. I don't think he's worth the top 10 pick.
Well, do you think Gurley was worth
this draft? Even we were talking about how it's kind of diluted a wide receiver. It's not that there's some good receivers. There's not a great one. Defensively, there's some good defensive players. But there might only be like two or three that are actually going to end up being great. I don't think it's that strong of a draft class. Maybe that's what pushes Ezekiel Elliott up toward the top 10. Maybe he does go in the top 10.
Yeah, but if you're Dallas at four and you are sold on we have to win now, and this is the piece that pushes us over the top, you pull the trigger.
When's the last time a team looked at a running back as the piece that would push it over the top, though? Especially in this day and age in football. And Elliott's a great do-it-all type of running back. Like, he can do anything. I just don't know if he's worth a top 10 given the way that football.
I don't think any running back is worth a top 10. We had a conversation last year.
Right.
And Todd Gurley is a franchise player.
Right.
I mean, St. Louis, Los Angeles can build their team around him. Right. Adrian Peterson was a franchise player. Is Ezekiel Elliott that guy? I don't know. But in the right situation, forget about fantasy. I mean, look, Dallas needs maybe to address that position. If they don't want to go with, you know, 29-year-old Darren McFadden and 27-year-old Alfred Morris. Who knows?
Has Urban Meyer produced any good running backs in the NFL? I mean, running backs weren't really his thing at Florida. They had good ones, but not like pro prospects.
Percy Harvin played running back a lot for him in that.
Chris Rainey?
That era.
Didn't he do that?
Yeah, but.
Rainey was
that
part of that
Urban Meyer?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was there.
I'm trying to think it had to be Muschamp that recruited Matt Jones. And Kelvin Taylor was.
I feel
the
like there's
guy.
Somebody that we're totally blanking on.
Utah? I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, you know the knock on the offenses, but look, he's produced some good talent out of that offense. Just I don't know about running back, but that doesn't
excellent talent, right?
Yeah, yeah, but also you know Alex Smith and Tim Tebow and
was Carlos Hyde his?
No.
How long has he been at Ohio State? It hasn't been that long, has it?
It's 4 years, I think.
Yeah. So then I don't know if Hyde is his.
This was just his third season.
But Zeke should be his.
No, but you know what? Still, Hyde is a guy who thrived in his offense, right?
Hyde was his, right? He didn't recruit Hyde, but he coached Hyde.
Yeah, he must have.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so that works. Thank you. That was a stupid oversight. So anyway, let's go to Jamie's sleepers. Ryan Tannehill. So when you call Tannehill a sleeper, what do you think best case scenario is for Ryan Tannehill?
Look, I let's put a disclaimer on this first off. This is before the draft, so you know a lot of this is going to change. I'm going to write this story probably three times between now and you know the end of August, middle of August. So I'm just looking at guys that I would consider that have a chance with a late round pick to be a viable option for you, whether it's starter, stream at the quarterback position, somebody who's got potential. And I look at this offense and the weapons that they're putting around him. I think Devontae Parker is going to be very good. He's going to play the X receiver in Adam Gase's offense. That's been Demaryius Thomas. You go back a few years ago when he was the wide receivers coach for the Broncos, that was Brandon Lloyd. If you remember that big season Brandon Lloyd had, you know, which was a little flukish, but still. Thomas for a couple of seasons. Alshon Jeffrey would have had very good numbers last year if he stayed healthy when he was in that role. And so Parker is a guy that closed the year playing at a high level. I think that helps Tannehill. You know what Jarvis Landry is. You know, he's a very good weapon. I think Jordan Cameron benefits in this offense. And I just like, you know, what Tannehill has shown at times. He has a lot to prove still, but, you know, if you're just going to take a flyer on a number two quarterback, if he can run a little bit more, you know, he was the number 11 quarterback 2 years ago. And it was I think, you know, depending on your league, the way I look at it was a 28 point difference from him going from the 11th best quarterback to the 17th best quarterback. So, you know, what changes for him? His rushing yards went down by almost 200.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's big. His passing stats went up, but his touchdown passes and interceptions were almost identical.
Yeah, he had three more passing touchdowns in 2014. The rushing is really interesting because outside of that five-game stretch in 2014 where he had between 35 and 49 rushing yards, and that's nice. I mean, 3 to 4 points per game just from rushing. He has been a very inconsistent, at times just complete non-factor as a rusher. So do you even consider that with Tannehill, or are you just banking on him becoming a better passer?
I don't know what to make of Ryan Tannehill, and I know that sounds really stupid because he's been in the league a long time. He's on his second contract, but I feel like there's still questions. I have questions about him that I can't answer.
I think the Dolphins do.
Right, yeah. Because of how the previous coaching staff handled him. And I don't know if he's able to be able to work well with the freedoms that Adam Gase is allegedly going to give him. I will agree that he's got a great receiving core around him with Devontae Parker. We're all going to buy into Devontae Parker. I don't think Ryan Tannehill works well behind a bad offensive line. The offensive line in Miami theoretically should be fine. I'm a little worried about it being great, and I think that Tannehill's just one of those quarterbacks that needs a great offensive line. I know we talked about the run game not being that much of a factor for Miami. That's how it stacks up now. I'm sure they're going to add somebody.
They're going to be in the market for Elliott.
Right. So, and I would love it if they got him.
Sure.
I think he would be just the perfect type of fit for what Adam Gase has had in his offenses at running back. And
I wouldn't discount Ajayi. We don't really know what he's going to bring, but there's.
Yeah. I mean, all the Boise State fans that listen already know just how good Ajayi was in college, but I'm starting to think that was just because he was a beast in the backfield and just physically dominated his opponents. I know how many great quarterback sleepers there are this year, and Tannehill just isn't toward the top of my list. I'd rather have Phillip Rivers, Jameis Winston, Marcus
Mariota.
Oh,
but you're not talking about sleepers. Those guys are going to be drafted either early in Rivers' case.
Well, when you say early in Rivers' case, what are you thinking?
When I say early, he's going to be drafted as a starter. I think people look at him as a starter.
That's
Rivers?
Jameis, yes. I think Jameis is in that next group of where I would categorize those guys as a chance to break out.
Right.
You know,
is Tyrod Taylor in that group?
Yes.
Okay.
Derek Carr's in that group. Mariota's
absolutely
in that group.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we're naming quarterbacks that I'm taking ahead of Tannehill.
I agree with you. Then there's that next group of guys. It's more of the also-rans. You know, the way that I would put it is guys who you know you've either bought in on them before, in Tannehill's case, probably coming
Flacco
off of.
Would be in this
Flacco,
group.
Flacco, Ryan, Stafford, Tannehill. Kirk Cousins, I think, is in that group just because, at least for me, I think he takes a step backwards.
I think he takes a huge step backwards.
So that's kind of that group where I'm looking at in terms of sleepers is I think they're better than the Sam Bradfords, than, you know, whoever starts for Cleveland, you know, the terrible tier, you know, if you want to look at it that way. It's kind of in that buffer group. So like Flacco could be in the sleeper category. And I think Tannehill is somebody that, again, I don't know if people draft him, and I don't know if you have to.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there is upside there because one, we've seen it, and two, the circumstances surrounding him say, I think more upside than downside fantasy wise. I don't know what that translates to on the field.
So in the last six games of the season, that's when Devontae Parker started to emerge. Ryan Tannehill had three games with 329 or more passing yards. That's pretty good. The fantasy production was only there in two games, but look, three games with 329 or more. That's solid. Hopefully he can be a little bit more consistent going forward. All right. So that was one of the two sleepers at quarterback in Jamie's column. Again, you have to go to the website if you want to find out more, but do we have Big Kane 4 over here? Jamie Eisenberg
going Big Kane 3.
I guess me. Oh, no, I'm Big Kane 2. That's right. Dave is 1. Okay, you're Big Kane 3.
No.
I thought Dave Richards was Big Kane 3.
Probably. Duke Johnson as a sleeper. What? Go ahead.
He was 4th in receptions for running backs, and we just got through talking about how bad this team is going to be. So I like what Hugh Jackson's history is with running backs. I think he has the ability to lean on a guy that has this type of playmaking ability. He's obviously better in PPR leagues than he is in standard formats, but I think this receiving corps is terrible. I think you're going to see an offensive line that's terrible. A lot of dump-off passes to Duke. And the way I view him is you have to look at him like a Deion Lewis, like a Danny Woodhead, that type of player, and that's on the high side of things. I don't know if he gets to that level, but I think, you know, you want people that are going to touch the ball quite a bit. And so I think he's easily going to be around 200 touches between his carries and his catches. I think he can eclipse 80 catches in this offense just based on how they're going to need him.
Which would mean like 120 carries. Yeah. Well, what is that? Like 8 a game? 9 a game?
Which is probably what he had last year.
Yeah.
On average.
He had, 104 carries in 16 games.
Right. So that'll go out.
61 catches.
Look, I the thing that I wonder about Duke, and yes, PPR sleeper, no doubt. He's not even a sleeper in PPR.
No.
I think he's somebody that's, you know, kind of middle of the draft type.
Sure.
And I love him. I'm worried about him holding up as a feature back.
But he won't be.
Well, then he shouldn't be a sleeper in a non-PPR.
But that's what it is. You're looking for somebody that's, I mean.
But what am I going to get out of him if I'm going to draft him?
You're trying to find somebody. This is what a sleeper is. You're trying to find somebody late in your draft that has the chance to hit. Does it a guarantee that they were? No.
No, but Dave's argument is, does he have the chance to hit in a standard, standard scoring league?
Sure.
Adam, you got to say it right.
In a standard league.
Does he have the chance?
I certainly understand the negative. And believe me, every player in this column is a negative or has a negative.
Sure.
Otherwise, they wouldn't be in this category. So you're looking for players that you're going to be available to you in the back half of your draft, whether it's the back middle or the back end altogether. And so I think just again, I'll take a chance on a guy that's going to be involved as a receiver with the receiving core right now that is led by Andrew Hawkins and Brian Hartline.
What's really his upside in standard scoring leagues? Like in PPR, it makes total sense.
I could see him being 1,000 to a 1,200 total yard guy. I think he has that type of upside. Now the touchdowns, I don't know. Can he get to 6? Maybe. You know, again, this offense is just completely bare and terrible. And so I think he's going to touch the ball enough that it's going to make him viable.
I have a thought. And we've seen Hugh Jackson do this before. Last year, remember, I went to Bengals camp. The guy that he couldn't stop talking about besides Tyler Eifert, and he was like, go back and tell your fantasy friends this. And I didn't do it because who was going to do it? But Rex Burkhead,
yep,
who is a running back, who does have good hands, and you saw him get a little bit of play in the last postseason, not the one most
2 years
recent.
Ago when their receiving core was off.
Right. What if Cleveland's receiving core is so bad that they keep Duke Johnson on the field all the time
as a slot guy,
and he could be their slot guy. He can line up in the backfield. He can line up.
He's going to touch the ball a lot. That's what you're looking
for. He can do that. He really can. I think the 80 catches is a cinch. I think the 120 carries is kind of a, and I think
the injury concerns.
I know, right. The injury concerns. It was stunning. He couldn't stay healthy in training camp in the preseason, and then the regular season starts and he's just fine.
Yeah, but that's, you know, I think that's partially because he didn't really get that many carries. And I don't think he is a guy that can get a lot of carries. That's just my personal opinion on Duke Johnson.
I'll tell you who he could be. He could be Charles Sims.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's go to Charles Sims. He's next on your sleepers list. Charles Sims actually finished as the number 22 running back in both standard and PPR with 107 carries, 3 more than Duke Johnson. A ton more yards, 529 yards compared to 379 for Duke on the ground. And they had similar receiving numbers. Duke had 61 catches, 534 and 2. And Charles Sims had 51 catches, 561 yards, a little bit more yardage. And 2 more touchdowns, 4 total touchdowns. Go ahead with Charles Sims.
No, I they're very similar players in my opinion. You know, you're not going to get a guy as the featured option. You know, and Charles Sims, I asked Dirk Cutter at the owner's meeting about, you know, will his role change? And he said no. He said, we like what we have. Now, the thing you're counting on with Charles Sims is what's Doug Martin's season like? Is he the same guy we saw last year that was motivated in a contract year and goes and challenges for the rushing title? Or is he the guy that we saw the previous 2 seasons that couldn't stay healthy? And when he was hurt, he didn't play through it like last year when he did. So I think, you know, you're counting on Charles Sims. He is a must if you draft Doug Martin. And I think you got to look at him and say, okay, PPR, you know what you're getting. You're getting 50 catches. He could probably do that if he plays 16 games. But can he do more running the ball? And so I think you're looking at 1,000 yards again, with the chance to be in that 12 to 1,300 yard range. And if he scores a couple more touchdowns, he's, you know, going to be a potential starter for you.
Worried about him riding my bench all season. It's almost the exact same argument as Duke Johnson. And I like Sims better than Duke in any format.
So do I.
And part of it's because I don't know if Doug Martin can do what he did again. And I want to have that guy. Plus, I feel like he's good for like 10 carries a game, plus whatever he does catching the ball. I really think he's got a shot at getting.
But he was at 107 carries. So he was the same as Duke.
Right. I feel like that. I think that role can go up a little
bit. Not according to Dirk Cutter.
Yeah.
I mean, he said it. He's like, we, you know, matter of factly, no, I don't see his rushing going up. He goes, we like Charles as a receiver out of the backfield.
I just don't know. I mean, I feel like in standard scoring leagues, there is no point in getting a guy that's not going to score touchdowns. Ultimately, what's going to make these guys, strictly in standard scoring, ultimately what's going to make these guys relevant is either an injury to Doug Martin or whoever's going to be running the ball in Cleveland, or that they somehow score a lot of touchdowns. I just don't see a guy who's a receiving specialist being someone you want to start in standard leagues if he's not getting in the end zone. And these guys have trouble scoring.
Right. And this is where I would draw a line between Sims and Duke Johnson. Is I look at Sims as somebody who I would love to carry on my roster, just waiting for something to happen to Doug Martin, or as trade bait to eventually trade to the guy who has Doug Martin, or to trade for Doug Martin during the season. If Martin doesn't meet expectations, well, I can trade for Martin. I've got Martin and Sims, and I can feel good about that Tampa Bay backfield locked up. I don't know if I can say the exact same thing about Duke, because even if, let's just say that it's Isaiah Crowell and Duke Johnson, hopefully nobody's throwing up right now at that thought. And Crowell gets hurt. I don't know if Duke's going to be an every down guy. Mm-hmm. I know Sims can be an every down guy for Tampa Bay.
And he averaged 4.9 yards per carry for what that's
right.
worth.
Right. And thank goodness he was great last year, because he was a Lovie Smith regime guy. They drafted him because they thought he was a lot like Matt Forte. And if he had had a bad year last year, I think, I don't know if his playing time would be locked in like Dirk Cutter is saying.
Can I ask you guys a question? You know, the way things operate now, we're year round and fantasy football is year round and fantasy everything is year round. Do you find it more difficult to do these sleepers lists? It's so hard to uncover people, you know, uncover gems. Everybody knows about everybody. Now, do you find this to be a more difficult challenge than it used to be?
I still think people want to know who we're thinking about.
Yeah, I know. I get that.
I don't
think
that's his point. I think his question is like, are you able to find guys that people don't know about already? You know,
right.
It's like, and I'll tell you just in doing this that the hardest thing to do now is, and I know other sites do drafts, they do dynasty drafts and they hold all these things and they have, you know, these, you know, not necessarily us on ESPN and Yahoo, but, you know, some of the smaller sites, have drafts going on where they're recording average draft position. The hardest thing to do it is not having average draft position, because that's the best way to say this guy is a, you know, like we're speculating. We're saying, you know, Charles Sims is going to go here and Duke's going to go here and Tannehill may not get drafted. And so like when I do the bus, you know, which we'll get to, you know, I'm just saying, okay, this guy's going to go in this range and I think that's going to be too high. And so to me, that's the kind of the benchmark of where these guys fall. Because it's easy for me to say Charles Sims is a sleeper, because I think it's kind of where he's going to be drafted. But by the time we get to August, Martin may have been dealing with a hamstring strain, or, you know, he may have a big preseason performance or something like that, you know, that pushes his value up where it's like, well, you're an idiot for saying he's a sleeper.
Yeah.
Which is why you rewrite the article.
Well, of course. But I mean, just in general, you know, even the guys that I'm going to do the next time around, you know, which is going to be following the draft and that, that time frame. So it changes, you know, and, you know, we got into the magazine business again last year. We're going to do it again this season. I'm going to write this column then, and that sort of lives in entity throughout the course of the summer.
Okay. So let's go to more sleepers then. Couple of wide receivers entering their second seasons, sort of. Dorial Green-Beckham, yes, he's entering his second season. Kevin White will really be entering his first after missing the entire 2015 campaign. Okay, so are they in the same class, Kevin White and Dorial Green-Beckham, or is White clearly ahead of Green-Beckham? How do you guys see it? Dave, I'll go to you first on this one.
I love both of these picks. I think Green-Beckham is a little easier to trust because we've seen him play. And I like his quarterback, I like his size. I think he has a chance to be no worse than the 1B receiver in Tennessee, if not emerge as the 1A. Seems like he's got his head on straight. There were some issues about him off the field when he was drafted last year. And I think he's the perfect candidate, maybe the ultimate receiving candidate, to make a jump from his rookie year to his second season. Tennessee is going to be a team. They're going to try and run the ball to DeMarco Murray. I think DeMarco Murray is going to have a lot of attempts. I think he will have more success this year than last year. But ultimately, I think the Titans are going to be playing from behind and doing that whole chase points thing that we were talking about. And I think that'll help open the door for Green Beckham. I also think he's an outstanding red zone threat. And he's just got that huge size that's going to make him tough to cover when Tennessee gets inside the 10, however often that ends up being. I like drafting him as a quality number three fantasy receiver, and I think he's got the potential to be better than that.
And you would take
perfect
him,
definition of a sleeper. Perfect.
You would
definition.
Take Green Beckham over Kevin White?
Yes.
Okay.
I would.
Jamie, how do you see those two?
Yeah, I would take Green Beckham over him too. He had seven games with at least five targets last year, and he scored seven fantasy points in a standard league in four of them. So I think he builds off that with more targets. Mike Mularkey, I asked him about him at the annual meeting, and I said, how important is this offseason for him? And he was like, oh, it's huge. He's never had this before. Sat out a season, his final season of college, or wasn't eligible, his final, year of college eligibility because of the transfer. And then, going through the draft process. And so he's like, we gave him a bunch of stuff that he's got to learn. Hopefully he comes back and on the playbook. But he said his on-field stuff is going to be more important than what he does, in terms of his mental preparation. Kevin White had the same, deal essentially, no offseason really because of the draft. And then the injury, Jeremy Langford, when I spoke to him a couple weeks ago, I said, have you seen Kevin? And he said, yeah, he looks like he was before the injury. So athletically, if he was coming out now, I forget who we were talking to about this recently. Maybe it was Luke Rogers.
Yeah, it was Luke. Yeah.
Who said that
he'd be the best number one receiver.
And I think that goes without saying, because he was basically, in the conversation with Amari Cooper as the best receiver 2 years ago. So, this is an offense that is in desperate need of a number two guy. Marquise Wilson was their second best receiver in terms of catches last year for the Bears, and he was terrible. So between, losing Martellus Bennett, obviously Zach Miller is going to play a role. This is another team, not necessarily to downgrade Jeremy Langford, but if the running game doesn't have the same success that it had with Matt Forte and Jay Cutler's put in a little bit more of a passing situation, I think you see Kevin White really benefit playing in a lot of single coverage opposite Alshon Jeffrey. So, I like what Dave was saying about, having these guys as third receivers. You're going to see them drafted as number four guys though, which I think is really where the benefit lies, is that they're going to go in a spot in your draft, especially people that are, targeting, receivers early, and then you get a competent third guy. This is the type of upside play that ends up being, one of the difference makers for your team.
Where would you feel comfortable drafting either one of these guys?
Well, I mean, I know the way I'm going to draft, so I'm going to probably go receiver early, come out of my first three picks, most likely with two, of my top 15 guys. And then I'll probably somewhere in that round five, round six range, take a third guy. And then this is, seven on is where I would try and target one of those.
Yeah, guys. I don't mind Green Beckham in seven. And I think White is on that 7-8 fringe as of now.
Mm-hmm. Would you rather have Steve Smith or Dorial Green Beckham?
Green Beckham.
Both of these young receivers over Smith.
How about DeSean Jackson?
If Smith was healthy, though, it's a different conversation.
DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, I don't want DeSean.
Yeah, I would probably lean toward the upside of these two.
Stephon Diggs.
Same thing. I'd rather have the two young guns than Diggs.
Their quarterbacks are better than what Diggs is dealing with.
Now, as you might have been able to tell from the way I phrased the question, I thought you guys were going to prefer Kevin White to Green Beckham. Is that something you could see changing if he looks good during the preseason, Kevin White? Because obviously going into their rookie seasons, White was the much more highly touted prospect.
But I think a lot of people, though, to your point that you just ended on, a lot of people were saying, at least if I remember correctly, had Green Beckham played athletically, he is the best receiver
That's
coming
true.
Out of that draft class. So,
that is definitely a good point.
Right. He fell in the draft not because of his on-field play.
Right. I think, like, if you're Tennessee and the way that draft fell for them last season, as a mess of an organization that they were, or maybe still are, to get Mariota in the first round and Green Beckham in the second round, I mean, those are, two difference-making type of players. And I think the reason why, I don't want to speak for Dave, but at least for me, I expect Mariota to take a big step, and remember, we didn't really get a chance to see 16 games out of him because he got hurt with that knee injury. So if he does play 16 games and has hopefully some continuity on offense, you know, after the change in coaches last year, then maybe this helps just this entire group, you know, step forward. But I don't think, you know, this isn't really to discount Kevin White and what his upside could be. But I just think Green Beckham's probably in a little bit, slightly better situation, especially coming off of a healthy year.
Who's got the better chance to be the number one receiver for his team?
Yeah,
Green
absolutely.
Beckham
Green
or
Beckham.
White?
Yeah, throw it out.
And Chicago wants to be conservative offensively.
Maybe.
I don't see John Fox as, you know, ripping off his shirt and running around Hallis Hall saying, all right, we're going to throw the ball 600 times.
Yeah, but his
a
best
game.
Season ever as a coach was when he was ripping off his shirt and they were throwing the ball all over the place.
With Peyton Manning.
With Peyton Manning. Right. And Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders.
Oh, it's circumstantial, but, you know, it still is what it is.
Yeah. At that point, he was taking off his shirt and just getting out of Peyton's way. Whatever you want, Peyton, you go ahead. Then he runs around. Let's go.
Last sleeper here. Austin Seferian Jenkins, a tight end sleeper, one of two tight end sleepers in Jamie's column. Okay, tell me what you like about Austin Seferian Jenkins, and give me some guys that you think are going to go around him in the draft and how you value him.
He's outside my top 12 now. I think the position obviously got a lot better with Kobe Fleener going to the Saints and Ladarius Green going to the Steelers. But he feels very similar to me to Tyler Eifert. And you remember what Eifert was his first 2 years, couldn't stay healthy. And then all of a sudden he got healthy. He was with, he was in a situation where, you know, got the chance for a lot of production, because he played the majority of a full season. And Seferian Jenkins is in an offense where, you know, and to Dave's credit, you know, I've said this on a couple of video shows now, you know, Jameis Winston, go back to his days at Florida State. I just spoke to Jameis, at Anquan Boldin's charity event last week, and he stayed with Nick O'Leary, who's a Palm Beach County resident when he was going to, they both were attending Boldin's, charity event. And the reason I bring that up is he has a good rapport with his tight ends. He threw 22 touchdowns last season. Winston did. 8 went to the tight end group. 4 of those went to Seferian Jenkins. So, you know, if you see Seferian Jenkins maybe being the recipient of the majority of that, which, you know, it's not going to be a stretch for him to go to 4 to 7, if he plays 16 games, it's a guy that not a lot of people are going to draft two tight ends. I don't advocate for that. I know Dave doesn't either. But this could be one of those, he gets off to another early start, you pick him up off waivers. If he stays healthy, I don't have any doubt he's a top 12 guy.
Right. So the move, and this is just to contradict what I would normally say, which is I don't like getting two tight ends. Don't think of him as a second tight end. Think of him as a blue chip prospect.
Yep.
Because you'll take a sleeper prospect that hits regardless of position.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
So if you look at Seferian Jenkins and you like what he does in training camp in the preseason and people see what you see, then they should go ahead and take Seferian Jenkins with probably their second to last pick in the draft.
And you know, and as I'm talking this through, you go back to Dirk Cutter's last stop when he was in Atlanta when he had Tony Gonzalez. Again, clearly, no one's comparing Seferian Jenkins to Tony Gonzalez, but that's an offense that used the tight end a lot in the red zone. And so I think you just look at what Cutter's offense is, what Jameis likes to do. Those two guys are going to come if they stay healthy in terms of Vincent Jackson. But Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson draw a lot of attention because they're big targets and certainly playmakers. And I do think, you know, we kind of touched on this a little bit. I think Jameis takes a nice step forward, and I think all of his receivers follow suit with Seferian Jenkins being a big part of that.
Good stuff. More sleepers on the website, fantasynews.cbsports.com. We'll also talk about breakouts and busts, although I have a feeling, well, you know, we're going to be able to squeeze in two podcasts before the draft, right?
Yep.
So we should be able to get to breakouts
we and
busts.
We can do whatever we want to.
We can do, yeah. We're adults. We're adults. We're on LinkedIn and everything. Emails, fantasyfootball@cbsi.com. First email. Oh, I forgot about this one. This is Steve from a big city in Wisconsin, Dave.
Milwaukee?
Sure. Steve has an engagement story.
Oh, this is a good one.
Did you read this, Dave?
No, sir.
Okay, don't read it. Don't read ahead. Just.
All right, I'm just going to sit back and let you tell me a story, Adam.
All right, this is from...
Why are you taking your pants off, Dave?
Why are you going to say that? Gosh, Steve? Can't a man take off his pants in his office in peace with coworkers?
We're in a glass conference room. Everybody's staring at you.
Dave, I am sorry. Or Steve, rather. I am sorry that we've tarnished your engagement story. I'm going to read it anyway. My now fiance and I have been dating for 2.5 years. We met playing pickup hockey against one another, and hockey has always been a big part of our relationship. We've been talking about marriage for a while, and last December we entered a raffle to win a free ring. Sadly, we didn't win, but we shopped around a little, and I got an idea of what types of rings she likes. So I had the idea this January to propose to her at her nationals tournament for hockey. We live with two other couples in a rented house. One of the other women in the house was my spy in figuring out her ring size. One of her teammates kept me informed on their game schedule and gave me the team's email addresses so I can include them in my plan. All right. A long time ago, I made a sign that I bring to all of her games. It says, "Go Molly," etc. Her teammates always give her crap about it, so I thought, what better way to pop the question than with signs? I created signs enough for her entire team to hold, which read, "Will you marry?" and one for myself, which read, "Me." After their last game of the tournament, I had her coach distract her by the bench while all the other players came to the exit door where they picked up the signs I had made. When she looked over, all her teammates were holding up their signs. I walked onto the ice holding my sign along with the ring. I got down on one knee and asked her, and she happily said yes. We got to celebrate with all her teammates, whom both of us are friends with, and had the rest of the weekend as a mini vacation to kick off our engagement. That's pretty cool.
You know what? That's a great story for them. Because he was smart enough to kind of mesh what brings them together and what her passions are into the engagement, which is such an important part of any love story.
Now, you got to get married at a hockey rink, right? Like, like skate down the aisle?
I think you've got to have Lord Stanley's cup right there.
That's a good call.
When you get married, the ring bearer should be the cup. You should put the ring in the cup.
Right.
And then that guy with the white gloves has to wheel the cup down the aisle.
Yeah.
And then,
I'm sure that's easy to do.
Yeah, and then you just have to reach into the cup to get the ring out.
It's probably affordable for a guy and a couple that live with two other couples and, you know, had to try to get a ring out.
You know,
of
maybe the NHL could do something nice here. And
well, we could start a drive.
Yeah.
Like, if we knew anything about the NHL, we could talk to people.
Lord Stanley at Steve and Molly's wedding.
Well, he included a picture, and it's actually really awesome.
Yeah, the signs. I saw
you know it. What? Yeah, if you couldn't get the actual Stanley Cup, sorry. You can make one out of tinfoil, and then you can have that brought down.
Oh,
that's almost the same thing.
So anyway,
what I think would be cool is with this idea, you should go to their wedding.
I could be Lord Stanley's cup. I'll dress up in a big silver. I'll be like the Tin Man.
He has a fantasy question. He has a fantasy question.
God, get me out of this wedding.
Who might be this year's Devontae Freeman? Steve asks.
That's a good, well. We talked about a couple, at least from my opinion, Duke and Charles Sims. But what about his teammate, Tevin Coleman?
Yeah, that's not a bad one.
Dave, you have any nominees?
Yeah, Carlos Williams would be one. Who I think if he gets a chance could certainly
pick it up. Totally injury related.
How about Matt Jones in Washington?
Let's say he
solves his fumbling issues and he lands that lead role. He can play three downs if they want him to.
Ajayi if they don't add somebody of significance for the Dolphins. I think you look at two guys that we talked a lot about last year and kind of similar situations. Amir Abdullah and Melvin Gordon. You know, guys that we thought were going to play well as rookies. We thought the same thing with Freeman, and here we go. Second year.
I'll give you one more. Buck Allen in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. If he beats out Justin Forsett, sure.
Yeah.
So, Jake from Chicago. Hey, Eddie Lacy, Big Ben, and Trent Richardson.
Chicago's a great place, by the way, to get married.
All have lost weight this offseason. Eddie Lacy, Big Ben, Trent
I should
Richardson.
Be on that list.
Have you?
I like 3 pounds. Thank you. I need the encouragement.
And you added an S to your last name. I need some advice on a keeper. Half point PPR, 14 team league, keep one with no penalty. Jarvis Landry in the 15th round or T.Y. Hilton in the 7th round, half point PPR.
He said no round penalty, but then he listed the rounds with them. It's Hilton. Yeah. Hilton's the pick.
Oh, I think never mind, Dave. You're right. That's confusing. Go ahead, Jamie.
Well, let's just say it is the rounds. You lose the rounds. I wonder what the difference in a half point PPR was between Landry last year.
I can tell you.
And Hilton the year before.
Ooh, maybe I can't.
Oh, I would bet it's pretty significant.
Landry in a half point PPR last year scored 203.5. Hold on. Let's nerd out for this one.
He scored 203.5 fantasy points. Good for 12.7 points per game.
I can't go on with it. I don't know what T.Y. Hilton had in a half point PPR last year, but it was pretty good.
No, 2014 T.Y. Hilton, right?
Right. Yeah.
So he had 168 plus 41. So that's what? That's 209?
So that's where it is. Wow. I mean, that's how close it is. That was my point, is that T.Y. Hilton was great 2 years ago, and Landry was very good last year.
I guess I didn't realize that.
That's kind of where I was getting at, is that, you know, that 8-round difference makes you might want to lean toward Landry.
And then you just redraft somebody like Hilton later on. Yeah, okay. Maybe you can convince me of that. One question, though, is Landry going to get that same type of workload?
Oh, I think so.
With Devontae Parker taking this big step that we're kind of theming this podcast.
Yeah, but,
around.
You know, Landry is still the go-to guy, you know, for he's almost like I would view it as, and by no means, this is not to say that they're anywhere close to this level, but Devontae Parker is Rob Gronkowski and Landry is Edelman.
You just said that Devontae Parker is Rob Gronkowski. Oh my God, Jamie, you're crazy.
That's right. Yes. I don't know. If the numbers are that close, I think you really got to look at Landry in the 15th round by comparison.
Nathan from north of the 49th parallel.
Oh, God. I'm just going to go with the North Pole.
Hello, Sanders, Jordan, and Sims. Michaels?
Berries.
Berries? All right, sure. Why is no one talking about Deion Lewis? He is primed for a huge breakout year. Tell me why you both have Deion Lewis at 23 among running backs. Assuming you
injury
do.
Concerns, workload
is he gonna
concerns.
Play? Yeah. What's his rehab status like? You're never going to know that from New England. And so, you know, I think it was, I hope I'm getting the guy right, but I think there was a report out of New England that they're very high on Devontae Booker.
That he fits what they do.
Right. And so,
because he's versatile.
Right. So if they do go running back in the draft after bringing back LeGarrette Blount, and you saw James White, you know, played that role, not to the same level that Deion Lewis had, but, you know, more mouths to feed. I think Lewis right now, if you're drafting in, you know, any sort of, dynasty or redraft league, you know, depending how early it goes, or you just, you know, targeting guys, Lewis certainly is somebody that you put on your radar, but I don't know if he's worthy of being much higher, at least the way I view it from my rankings, than toward the, you know, early 20s.
Right.
But PPR is much higher.
Next email, Joe from Massachusetts. Dear Rob, Clay, and Martellus. Tight end.
Yeah, those are tight ends in New England. Mm-hmm. I had to think about Clay for a second.
Clay
Harbor. Clay Harbor.
Who would you keep in a 12-team PPR league with a two?
I would go Harbor 1, Bennett 2.
$200 budget, passing touchdowns for 6 points. Okay, whatever. You cannot start a running back at flex. So it's PPR. T.Y. Hilton for $31. Russell Wilson for $18. Jonathan Stewart for $16. Amir Abdullah for $14. Woodhead for $4, Kevin White for $3, Jameis Winston for $1, or Philip Dorsett for $0.
And we're keeping only one?
Yeah.
I'm keeping Woodhead.
For $4? It's full PPR?
Full PPR.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Before you do that, I'm just letting you know, running backs cannot be flexes. So
I thought you said that.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to reinforce that.
But he could start Woodhead, right?
He could, sure.
Is he starting two running backs?
Probably.
Okay. I think that's probably the right way to go. You know, because he was so good last year, and he's been good, you know, two of the last 3 years when he's been healthy. I think he was the fourth best running back in PPR last year.
He was up there very much.
So the question with him is always going to be the touchdowns, because you know he's going to touch the ball regardless. And he scored 9 times last year. I think it was 7 times in 2014. But yeah, the value makes it, you know, worth the risk.
Here's a weird stat. Woodhead scored 9 times last year. He scored in 4 games.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Which sucks, you know. It's frustrating.
But still, he knows he's going to catch the ball a ton.
He is, yeah. All right, last one then is from Brent. Hey, James, Lars, and Kirk. I think we get Metallica more than any other band.
Really?
I think so.
More than any other band.
Yeah, we don't get that many bands as I think Metallica. Anyway. I'm in a 10-team standard keeper league with 2 flex spots instead of a tight end and flex spot. I can keep 2 players from the following in the round I drafted them. Julian Edelman in the 7th, Tom Brady in the 9th, Mike Evans in the 12th, DeAndre Hopkins or Arian Foster in the 13th. Yes. Kelvin Benjamin in the 14th or Doug Baldwin in the 15th. So he needs two good options here.
The good options indeed. DeAndre Hopkins has to be that one.
Let me read them again for the sake of the listeners. Edelman. So we're keeping Hopkins in the 13th. It's either Edelman in the 7th, Brady in the 9th, Mike Evans in the 12th, Kelvin Benjamin in the 14th, or Doug Baldwin in the 15th.
I'm leaning Evans in the 12th.
Yeah, it's between Evans and Benjamin just because of the value difference. Yeah. But
I think it's almost better value for Evans.
We just, Adam, we just finished doing a video on Evans because, like I referenced, I spoke to Jameis Winston. So we were talking about Evans. And Dave said something on the video, which I think a lot of people, you know, rightfully so believe, is that he had a bad year last year. And in a lot of regard, he did. But take away of the three numbers, catches, yards, touchdowns, just take away the touchdowns. Anybody would sign up for 74 and 1,200, whatever he finished with, catches and yards. I think the touchdowns easily go up for him from three back to somewhere, not necessarily 12 like he had as a rookie, but somewhere close to 10. So to me, he's going to have a very nice, if not significant, bounce back season.
But it just seems so dependent on Vincent Jackson. Like it's clear as day that he's amazing when Vincent Jackson doesn't play, and he's like a borderline starter when Vincent Jackson does play.
Yeah, but I think he figures it out this year. Third year for him, he's spending a lot of time with Jameis. Those guys are running routes together. And when I say that, yes, they're running routes. Jameis is running routes with him. But they're throwing the ball together a lot. I don't know if Vincent Jackson's at those workouts, so I can't say that that's a benefit or a detraction. But I do think that that rapport, Dirk Koetter said it, it's happening. I want those two guys to be more on the same page. I think that definitely comes to fruition this year. And he's the number one guy in this offense.
Okay, and finally, we'll end it on that, but the last point I wanted to make was it's hard to see, agree or disagree, it's hard to see Jameis Winston taking the next step without Mike Evans doing it with him.
Agreed. Well, I'll go back to what I said about Winston, that he was five touchdowns away from being a top 12 quarterback. If Evans gets those five, would you be surprised if he goes from 3 to 8?
No.
No, of course not.
Right. So,
in fact, you almost expect more.
If you were to say Evans, 74, 1,208, that's
right
in
the ballpark for what's expected of Mike Evans this year.
Right. That's borderline number one guy.
Yeah.
And so there's Winston right there. If you just give him every other number the same, five more passing touchdowns.
Six rushing touchdowns last year for Jameis.
Second in the NFL behind Cam Newton for quarterbacks.
I don't think that drops that much.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Cool. Guys, thank you.
And he's lost weight. He's down to 230. Looks good.
Well, remember to email us with your top 10 in the NFL draft, and you can get in the podcast league. Everybody celebrate. Dave, yay. Jamie, thanks, guys.
You're supposed to celebrate more than that, Jamie.
Yay!
There we go. I'm Adam Azer. We'll talk to you next week,
everybody. Pretend like your kid scored a goal in soccer.